WNYC Studios is supported by Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Protein degradation can target and destroy cancer-causing proteins right inside the cell. It's how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at DanaFarber.org/everywhere.
For Wednesday, September 22nd, it's the early word from the WNYC newsroom. Hello, I'm Lance Lucky, in for Isaac Davey Aronson, with a look at this morning's top news stories, the day ahead, and reporting highlights from the WNYC news team. Coming up, Elsa Chang tells us how the City Board of Elections feels scapegoated over last week's problems with the new voting system, and Ozzie Pabura catches up with Carl Paladino's campaign for New York governor. We'll start with the morning's top headlines just ahead.
The Early Word is a production of WNYC Radio. You can support this podcast by making a donation at WNYC.org, where you can also get the latest updates on this morning's headlines on the news page.
A senior military official says a, quote, large number of Americans were among those killed in a helicopter crash in southern Afghanistan. NATO says 9 coalition service members died in all. The cause is still not clear. Senate Republicans blocked an effort by Democrats and the White House to lift the ban on gays from serving openly in the military. GOP senators were joined by 2 Democrats, Senators Blanche Lincoln and Mark Pryor of Arkansas, in voting against advancing the measure as part of a major defense bill. Another vote is planned after the election. Mayor Bloomberg is instituting a citywide hiring freeze and demanding that city agencies tighten their belts again. It's the 9th round of budget cuts over the past 3.5 years. The Education Department and Uniformed Services must cut spending by 2.7% this fiscal year and 4% next year. All other agencies were told to trim by 5.4% now and 8% next fiscal year. The city faces a $3.3 billion budget gap for fiscal year 2012, which begins next July. And Mayor Bloomberg was named the head of a group of cities tackling the problem of climate change. The C40 Climate Leadership Group looks for ways to reduce energy demand in cities and make them more resilient to the effects of climate change. But the mayor says convincing cities to spend money on infrastructure can be difficult even in good times.
The challenges, I think, today are greater because of the downturn in the economy around the world. When people are flush, they are more willing to try new things. When things get tough, they try to hunker down.
The mayor says cities should take advantage of cheaper building materials during the economic downturn to implement environmental projects. 2 men convicted of leading a $100 million mortgage fraud were sentenced to prison in a scheme that amassed a cast of corrupt mortgage brokers and lawyers to dupe sellers and buyers, then pocket the money that the banks lent. AFG Financial Group President Aaron Hand was sentenced in Manhattan to 8 1/3 to 25 years. CEO Eric Shields got 5 1/2 to 16 years behind bars. Prosecutors said the Garden City-based mortgage brokerage house was a hub of fraud, leaving sellers empty-handed, buyers with ruined credit, homes in foreclosure, and investors with worthless products linked to those bad mortgages. Transit officials say the 30-day unlimited Metro card is likely to be raised from $89 to $104. MTA Chairman Jay Walder says the alternative, a $99 capped pass that would have allowed up to 90 rides a month, has not caught on.
Well, I think it's safe to say that there hasn't been a tremendous amount of enthusiasm for the idea of a cap pass.
The final hearings in a series of public sessions on fare hikes was held last night in White Plains and Brooklyn. City officials say the first season of Luna Park, Coney Island's newest amusement park, has drawn hundreds of thousands of visitors, the most since 1964. WNYC's Kathleen Horan says the park now plans to capitalize on its summertime attendance by staying open through Halloween.
It looks like Halloween will also be the deadline for about a dozen businesses along the boardwalk. That's when they'll find out whether their expired leases have been extended. They've had to submit plans to the operator of Luna Park explaining how they'll spruce up their businesses, modernize them. Many of the business owners say that they're worried, but they've gotten used to uncertainty when it comes to Coney Island.
WNYC's Kathleen Horan. No word yet on how many tickets Luna Park actually sold or how much sales tax revenue it brought in, according to the city's Economic Development Corporation. The EDC says the city has already received around $100,000 more in rent than it projected since attendance at the park was so high. Taking a look at the calendar today, Secretary of the Interior Ken Salazar and Secretary of Energy Stephen Chu convene top government scientists and key industry leaders to discuss how to strengthen capabilities for responding to potential blowouts of oil and gas wells in deep water. Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner testifies before the House Financial Services Committee on the state of the international financial system, including international regulatory issues relevant to the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act. And New York Philharmonic conductor Alan Gilbert and Philharmonic musicians will join Wynton Marsalis, the artistic director of jazz at Lincoln Center, this morning for a free dress rehearsal ahead of tonight's opening night gala at Lincoln Center's Avery Fisher Hall. The musicians greet the public at 8 a.m. with the free rehearsal starting at 9:45. Just some of what's happening this Wednesday. The City Board of Elections says it's being made the scapegoat for the widespread problems reported at polling places on primary day. WNYC's Elsa Chang attended the board's first public meeting since the new voting machines made their somewhat dubious debut last Tuesday.
Voters, advocates, and Mayor Bloomberg had lambasted the board for poor planning and inadequate poll worker training. Machines broke down, completed ballots were openly visible, and polling places opened late. Executive Director George Gonzalez says these problems were, quote, blown out of proportion, and they were not the fault of the Board of Elections.
A lot of the issues that were reported was beyond our control. We were ready to do what we had to do. We had other sources who were impeding on our progress.
Gonzalez blamed police officers who didn't arrive on time to unlock doors, school officials who didn't open schools the weekend before to allow timely delivery of voting machines, and he blamed street closures on September 11th, 3 days before the primary, which made transporting voting machines a real headache. Commissioner Michael Ryan, a Democrat from Staten Island, said public officials who criticized the board were doing so for their own political purposes.
And if there's one person in this room that believes that those statements were not prepared before Election Day, I would question them and have them get examined.
Gonzalez says he's working on a plan for the November general election, but declined to say what it was or when it would be available. He said he had a report summarizing all the voting problems on primary day, but when I asked for a copy, he laughed and said it might be ready by mid-October. For WNYC, I'm Elsa Chang.
Since winning an upset victory in the Republican gubernatorial primary last week, Carl Paladino has been making the media rounds. And the upstate commercial real estate developer isn't holding his tongue, but he is adding a few policy details to his routine. WNYC's Ozzie Pabura has more.
A week ago, nobody expected Carl Paladino would be in Central Park having this kind of conversation with a CNN reporter who was trying to get him to comment about the proposed Islamic mosque and cultural center in Lower Manhattan.
I'm talking about the issues that are involving the everyday life of New Yorkers. I'm talking about jobs. That's a distraction from our core issues in the state of New York. And that's why Blasio and Cuomo, okay, their failure to address the core issues is going to hurt them.
While two CNN cameramen focused on Paladino, his campaign manager, Michael Caputo, was a few feet away being interviewed by the New York Times. He says he's been working nonstop since the primary.
I got a big hole in my mouth. I crushed a tooth while we were out on the campaign trail. They took it out in 22 pieces. And then they said I got on a plane to catch up with Carl.
A New York Post reporter and photographer waited their turn to talk to Paladino. Since the primary, major media outlets have been clamoring to speak with him, including WNYC.
If your question is, am I changing my message or anything like that, no.
What has changed since the primary?
Well, I've been humbled by the outpouring of support. It's just humbling, very humbling.
But don't be mistaken. Paladino is still throwing verbal bombs, mostly at his Democratic gubernatorial rival, Andrew Cuomo, the popular state attorney general who's sitting on a $24 million campaign war chest and double-digit lead in the polls. Paladino has questioned Cuomo's manhood and whether he has the cojones to govern. While Paladino has soaked up the media spotlight, Cuomo has largely avoided it. He's been huddling with campaign advisors, trying to figure out a way to respond to an opponent who doesn't seem to be afraid to say anything. So far, Cuomo himself is trying to take the high road.
I am not now going to be part of an effort that degrades state government and degrades New York politics and degrades democracy. I'm not going to do it.
And so far, Cuomo hasn't. During an interview with Talk 13 Radio in Albany, Cuomo spoke about strategies for campaigning and for governing.
My campaign is going to be about developing a plan to change the state and then talking about how you actually have the capacity to implement that plan.
But staying on the high road isn't that simple. The same morning Cuomo was laying out his overly positive campaign strategy, Palladino was having a radio town hall on WOR. Palladino announced a policy team to help shape his tax-cutting agenda and rattled off a few agencies he'd eliminate if elected. It was pretty wonky stuff.
You've heard Andrew. He's talking about capping a percentage increase in taxes. In other words, allowing a gradual growth of taxes. We're talking clearly about a continuous effort to cut taxes. We will cut taxes every year.
Cuomo says he's open to discussing the issues with Palladino just as soon as campaigns work out the details of debates. Palladino says he'll debate Cuomo every single day between now and Election Day. For WNYC, I'm Ozzy Papera.
2 years ago this month, Lehman Brothers filed the largest bankruptcy on record. But that doesn't mean the company has disappeared. Today, in a downtown courtroom, Lehman's chief executive, Brian Marcell, will update the judge overseeing the firm's handling of the initial $1 trillion in claims against the firm. To pay those claims, Lehman is selling off assets, including its real estate holdings, mortgages, even its art collection, which WNYC's Charlie Herman recently checked out.
In the quiet, hushed galleries at Sotheby's, there's a glimpse of a world that once existed in the halls of Lehman Brothers, before that bank declared bankruptcy.
There's several Richters. There's one very famous, beautiful photograph of Betty. Yeah, let's go over there.
Tobias Mayer is the global chair of contemporary art at Sotheby's. On Saturday, he will auction off nearly 150 works of art that filled the offices of Lehman Brothers and its money management firm, Neuberger Berman.
What was your initial reaction to it?
Well, I was just very impressed. You know, I was very impressed and I thought, okay, they did look carefully.
And purchased carefully as well. Like a good stock picker, the financial firm, in particular Neuberger Berman, purchased works by living artists at lower prices before those artists became more famous and more expensive. Damien Hirst, Richard Prince, John Curran, Julie Moretu.
It was about buying the art of today and buying in a prescient way to say who will have relevance in the future, and it was very selective.
While it's not uncommon for financial firms to own art collections, Neuberger stems from the passion of its founder, Roy Neuberger. In the 1920s, he moved to Paris to become an artist, but when he realized he would not have a career as such, he did the next best thing and made a career out of supporting other artists. Neuberger used his wealth as a financier and amassed a collection of contemporary art. In 1990, his firm continued that tradition and began building its own unique collection, not as an investment to be sold at some future date, but like its founder, as a patron of the arts. Lehman bought Neuberger in 2003 and merged the collections of the two firms. But with Lehman now in bankruptcy, significant works of art in a collection that took years to build are now unexpectedly on the auction block.
It is kind of bittersweet to see this here. On the other hand, I think the public benefits from being able to see this collection.
Jane Zubrow is a collector considering whether or not to buy some of the paintings hanging on the walls of Sotheby's.
I think the curator had a very good eye and acquired interesting artists and very, very good pieces.
Lehman hopes that good eye will pay off at a time when it needs the money to pay its creditors. One abstract painting by Mark Grotjohn, purchased for probably less than $20,000 9 years ago, could sell for as much as $800,000. In total, Sotheby's expects the auction to bring in $9 million. The proceeds will go to the bankruptcy fund to pay off the $260 billion in expected approved claims. For WNYC, I'm Charlie Herman.
The art of Lehman Brothers and Neuberger Berman is on view at Sotheby's until Friday, and while the collapse of Lehman has cost billions, you can see the art for free. Let's wrap it up with the Gig Alert.
Na despedida e chegada voz, o verso, o grão.
Brazilian music lovers should be familiar with the term MPB. It stands for Música Popular Brasileira, or Brazilian Popular Music, and refers to the rich songwriting tradition from artists like Gilberto Gil and Marisa Monte. One of the newest names to hit the scene is Pedro Mores. Drawing from the great artists of MPB, Pedro makes lyrical pop music influenced by jazz and samba.
e também libertação. A fronteira última jamais me desespera em toda a beleza.
You can hear Moraes play tonight at New Blue in the East Village. For a free download of this song, visit our culture page. Just click culture at WNYC.org.
Salve São Sebastião. É uma estrada velha e dó.
You can learn more about all the stories you heard here, download more podcasts, and go in-depth with our reporters on the news blog. That's all at our website, WNYC.org. You can hear us there 24 hours a day, as well as on the air at 93.9 FM and AM 820. From the WNYC Newsroom, I'm Lance Lucky. Have a great Wednesday.
Na despedida e chegada, voz, o verso, o grande.